this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Long off base, Jackson Jacks. I'm out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 175. Even though the headline says stock futures fall after Treasury yield rebound sparks sell-off. So they're not down anymore. Ricky, you think they should change that headline?
Yes, I do, Chief.
We need to get on that. By the way, which one of you guys is going to... use AI to change if I had $1 million to say if I had $1 billion. Is that you or is that Matt going to do that? Because $1 million ain't squat, man. Just saying. So, you know, use AI and just put $1 billion in there or $1 zillion or $1 trillion or something. Suppose I gave you $1 million. What would you even do with it? You can't even buy a nice boat with that. Ricky, are you there?
Sorry, Chief. I thought you were talking to one of our guests here, man.
You're the only Ricky I know.
My bad, man. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. It's crazy, dude.
Well, do we have Professor Kevin?
Yeah, you do. Good morning.
Morning.
You can call me Ricky. You can call me Ricky too if you want.
Well, you know, I just was there's no million-dollar crafts out on your lake, are there? I don't think your lake's big enough.
$1 million jet ski?
Well, you could build a casino out there like they did in Michigan City. It just will never be able to go anywhere. It just sits there, but it's in the water, so I guess it was a boat, right?
Yeah, so, and if it's a boat, then the gambling is much more ethical than it is if it's not a boat.
Yeah, well, it's
that was the Illinois riverboat law once upon a time.
I think,
yeah,
it was
not, it's not a riverboat, it's an experience, it's not a it's not a casino.
I think it was also had to do with, if we decide we don't like the idea, they could just all go away.
Mm.
There was a part of it. It was
kind that
of a,
ever an option?
I think in some people's minds that, well, you know, if this really doesn't work out the way it's supposed to and there's all kinds of crime and everything, we could tell these guys to go pound sand and go somewhere. But, you and I knew that was never going to happen. But I went on one of those. Actually, I went on the Michigan City one with our buddy Pat Burke one time. He and Gail came to town. But the one in... This is how when you think you know something and all of a sudden you see something different, Kevin, you realize, God, how wrong was I? Now you go to Vegas. I love going to Vegas. Before I was a market maker, I went 4 or 5 times a year on those charters that were, you know, cheap as hell, and it was so convenient. Can you imagine dropping your luggage off in the airport at the ticket counter, going right to the plane, going to the casino, going to dinner, going to your room, and there was your luggage in the room. No security. What a different day it was. And you flew out on a DC-8, or we even flew out on a 707 once. It was an older plane. Everybody went right to Vegas. Went out on Thursday, came back on Sunday. It was absolutely spectacular. But anyway, I went to, they had a beautiful boat. This, you know, the license, it's crawled all around the place and finally ended up in Des Plaines. That original license was in, it was in East Dubuque, of all places. I don't know if you remember any of the story. Some of the people from the trading floor had a piece of that license. I was not one of them. So this guy, one of my friends, had a Thanksgiving Day thing out there, and we all got a room at the, territory, whatever it is, where they got the general and all those great golf courses. Anyway, so we all stay there, and we all go to the casino. The boat is gorgeous. So we get on the thing. This is back when you had to, you can only be on there like an hour. And I used to, you know, love sitting in Vegas. I'd play blackjack 3-4 hours in a row. And I'm going, man, what can you do like in an hour and a half? Kevin, it was genius. Everybody'd pile on there. They'd immediately head for a table. They'd blow through all their dough in 40, 45 minutes, and then all head to the bar. And an hour later, you got a new group. Here I thought, man, how can anybody go out here and gamble? I'm sitting there, these guys got it all figured out. I'm the dummy. But, of course, it didn't leave the dock that night because of high winds on the Mississippi, right? There was no wind. They just didn't want to leave the dock.
You know those Mississippi winds, though. Yeah. You know, they're something.
But that was a boat. They didn't get enough business, especially during the winter. And they drove the thing down in New Orleans. It became one of the boats down there. But the license kicked around Illinois for probably 2 decades before it finally, it was going to, where the hell, it was going to go somewhere else. And all these people on the trading floor, they found a couple people that were crooked, not my friends on the trading floor. And they never let the license go anywhere, but it was the 10th license. And it was like it was like a zombie license for a long time. And that's the license that landed out in, is it Des Plaines or the one on the north side there? It became a land-based casino up in Des Plaines. That was the 10th license. Talk about a wacky story. But it was like in the wind for a couple of decades. I goes, wait a minute, that license was granted to somebody, you know, type of thing. How's that for a weird story, huh? So what'd you make of all the news this week with the Treasury? I got to ask Carl, how the hell the Treasury, this is something you normally see from the Fed and the Treasury's doing it. I hope he can tell me where exactly they're getting the money to do this, because you know the Fed can kind of make it up, but you don't usually see the Treasury go out and buy long-term bonds, unless they're selling more short-term and turn around and buying the long-term. But
that's exactly what they're doing.
I've never seen anything quite like this. I mean, coming from the Fed,
By the way, this isn't a new program. They're just saying they're expanding it, right? Okay, so the data on what they've done in the past has been there. It's there. There's something that should be paid attention to with that, which is what's actually going on in that regard, which is if you are holding long-term bonds, those ones that Bessent has bought back recently, he's bought back at about 60 cents on the original dollar. Now, you know all those not recognized mark-to-market losses that people have been sitting on as rates have gone up? Well, they're not unmarked to market anymore now, are they?
Well, the dude just went out and sold some last week.
Well, I understand that, yeah. but he's buying, the stuff he's buying is the off-the-run stuff. So it's not the current issue.
Right, but it gets you to the same place.
Well, unless you're the guy holding it, and now you tendered it in, but you only got 65 cents.
Right. For those who are missing the technicality here, if the long bond is, say, 6%, and you go out and you sell it at 7, okay, you're going to be selling it at a discount, correct?
Well, it depends on which way it is, but if you, the best way for listeners to think of this is that if I have a 3% 30-year bond, and the current ones are going out at 5, okay, instead of 3, then if I've got 25 years left on that, the only way you're going to get me to buy yours is to take the difference between the 3 and the 5 times the remaining duration.
Well, make it easier. The market price of yours at 3 is probably 80, not 100.
Maybe.
Maybe. 67, 7, somewhere in there.
Yeah. So it's a little more complicated than just a straight calculation because there's a time value in there too, right? But
if it's out 25 years, not much.
Well, but but it's not zero, all right? I'm just saying it's not a straight multiplication.
Let me explain the math here for people who don't know it. You're going to value your bond, and you can do this off an annuity table easy. If you have a $100,000 bond, at 3%, okay, and it's doing 25 years, you're going to get $3,000 a year for 25 years, and at the end of the 25 years, you're going to get your $100,000.
Right.
That you price out, and if the current market rate is 6%, that's not going to be worth $100,000. It's going to be worth probably 80 or 77 or something.
Right, because you have to discount the difference
yes.
across the remaining time. Okay, now, the thing is, two problems. One is, if you bought that one, say 5 years ago when long rates were 3%, if you need to sell it.
A foolish buy, by the way.
Which was rather stupid, but yeah. plenty of entities were actually more or less forced to do it, like life insurance companies yep. and other entities that, you know, pension funds that really don't have a whole lot of choice. They have to be in those instruments. All right. So, fine, but now, all of a sudden, you have a unrealized capital loss, which does bleed off as the years go on. But if you can't sit on that anymore and you puke it up, that's now a realized capital loss. All right. Now, here's the even bigger problem.
All right, but if you get your sheets from PTI or Merrill Lynch or somebody, it's going to show you down.
Oh, yeah. Hello. Right. And, by the way, that down bleeds off as time goes on. However, it didn't disappear into the ether. It was realized in that you got a smaller coupon payment than you right. would have gotten if you bought the new one. All right. So it's just realized over time as opposed to right now. All right. So the first thing is that Bessent has to issue in the short end in order to do this, which moves interest rate risk, short-term risk, onto the Treasury's balance sheet that it otherwise would not have had. All right, but in terms of the total amount of debt outstanding, the amount involved in this is quite small. The second problem, though, and the one that nobody's talking about yet and everybody's going to be, is that all of these deals that people are syndicating on AI debt and data center debt, do you want to know where this stuff's going? Because I've now got some rumblings out there. I got a pretty good idea where it's getting stuffed. You're not going to like this.
Hear it.
Target funds.
Yeah, you've heard of these, right?
I've heard of them, but I haven't done much research on them.
Okay, well, what a target fund is that they're run by all these different companies that operate 401ks and such for retirees. Well, to-be retirees. All right, the target fund is basically a premise that, well, you know, as you get closer to retirement, you should have more of your portfolio in bonds.
Yeah, except nobody believes that anymore.
Well, but
yeah, there are these target funds.
Run with the theory here. Yep.
Okay. So here's the thing: you would assume that the bonds would be for the fixed income would be for the most part in the Treasury complex somewhere. You'd be very wrong about that. A lot of these are in corporates, and one of the reasons that we're now seeing the ratings agency game being played again in this space is because, for fiduciary reasons, you cannot go stick junk in these things without people consenting to it. That ought to be rather obvious, right? That yep. doing that without people knowing about it would
junk,
be very
junk
bad
meaning like less than triple B or something
like CC minus.
Well, okay. There's actually a level. It's like, what is it? Depending on the place.
Well, anything under triple B is not considered investment grade.
Yep.
So anyway, there's ratings inflation that's going on again, including by much lesser than the Moody's and the Fitch guys, who are out there, but they're stamping them and they're saying, oh, no, these are investment grade. And this stuff is getting shoved into target funds. So you are going, my prediction is you are within the next couple of years when this thing blows up. This is going to be exactly the same thing that nearly wiped out my parents. I got my dad out of it. Thank God he listened to me before it happened. He was in GM acceptance notes, which were paying a couple of points of interest above treasuries. And when I found out that he was in there, this was in early 2007, I told him to get the blankety blank out of all of that crap or he was going to be bankrupt. And he was loving every minute of it because he was getting a nice fat coupon payment.
Of course, there's zero protection against those things going to zero.
All right. Well, the one
and,
of these...
and when GMAC blew up in 2008, the recovery on the particular Q-Sips and series that he was in was about 10 cents.
Why don't we, Ricky, why don't you put this down? Let's not go through all that today, but let's talk about that on Tuesday, because that was an example. GMAC, Kevin, as I recall, because Audrey's uncle was in the car business, so I talked to him. GMAC, at one point, they made a boatload of money, because they used to get the VIG for the dealers for the cars on the lot.
Oh yeah, no, it was.
And that's what, and then they also did lending to people, most of which had pretty good credit. Plus, you could repossess the car, and somehow or another, they wandered into mortgages. How did they do
right,
that?
The problem was they got into HELOCs and mortgages.
Yeah.
Yes. It wasn't, and then of course the entire thing blew up in their face in 2008.
Oh yeah,
and if you owned the stock, you ended up with a zero. But if you had these GM acceptance notes, you were lucky if you got 10 cents back. And this is exactly what's going to happen to the people in these target funds.
Kevin, if you wander into class today and you were to ask, by the way, we might have a Larissa sighting at the bottom of the hour here. She has a different schedule now, so she wants to come out on Friday from 6:30 to 7, and that'll be terrific. What we just talked about, Kevin, if you walk into class today, people in your class are not dummies, does anybody have any idea what is going on when they say something like this at the federal level, what it means and what people are trying to accomplish? I just noticed here, gold's up another like $70, and this GDX that I'm chasing with some calls is up another $3. I mean, this time, somehow or another, the market seems to be reacting into, we know what they're doing, they're pumping up the market, gold's to the moon, silver's to the moon, Bitcoin's to the moon. The message to the market appears to be that the dollar is going in a rat hole. I mean, this time the market's picking up on the record. I think it is, but if you were to bring this up in class, Kevin, what would anybody even think about this? I mean, we got so many policies flipping back and forth. Does anybody even know what this is? And we're trying to struggle to find out what it is.
Well, first of all, they'd ask me why the hell I'm bringing it up in an IT class. But
well, you've had other classes from time to time when you
that might be an issue. But I do have some very savvy adult learners who are coming back for different skill sets. So I don't want to say none. But you're asking the wrong person, because I'm first 2 year students. My full time students are, some of them are young people who've been out of school for 4 or 5 years. Some of them are coming right out of high school. They're not going to have this kind of literacy and so that would be topics that in our business program that you would hope they get. But also understand that in our classrooms where I am, we're pretty much living in the world, especially in the business curriculum, in the world of the principles courses, not in the world of the advanced finance. So students may go off to IU and get their finance degrees, and then they'll get Russell in a class or something like that. But yeah, you're asking me the wrong question. That's not a germane question to most of what I'm teaching.
Well, I guess I'll expand it here and say, what percentage of the population has a clue what's going on?
Hardly any.
Yeah, it's...
Because now I'll go back to that after I just begged off of it, and I will say that we have very intentionally over the years moved away from any kind of financial literacy education throughout the system, starting through, into primary grades, junior high, and so on. So maybe I could get people who were, literate enough to get into this, although, we're not going to get a whole lot of fiscal policy wonks as freshmen in college. It just ain't going to happen, and it never has happened. Would you have been able to do this when you were a freshman in college?
No, probably not.
No, so,
I was stuck in pre-med classes, so no.
Well, yeah, I understand that, and that's why, plus my comment about IT, you were in pre-med classes. I got people immerse themselves in learning the just the really basic levels of
of how the damn how computers work, how networks work, how, you know, what the support activities are, all that kind of stuff, or you know, taking basic level courses like computing logic, which is before they even write a line of code, learning to do structured logic. So that's curriculum stuff. So that's what I mean. You're asking me if anybody would know that in class. What, you know, they no any more than we would have in the 1970s.
Well, actually, sophomore year I would have, because I shifted over to economics. But here's my
When you go in and you start taking economics, you know, that's part of our general education group rather than our business group. So I know economics professors. It may very well be that that they're covering some of this material in their courses. I'm not.
Well, the reason why I asked this question, and Carl, please chime in, is I had a long conversation, it wasn't that long, with Andrew and Wayne yesterday about sort of the state of, I'll say, the news media, for lack of a better term. And Andrew was pretty articulate with saying that, you know, when this kind of stuff happens, even if it's a simple kind of thing where the government, you know, no man can do one thing, okay? You know, you light off a firecracker, oh, by the way, you make a noise, right? Right. And it seems to me, when I listen to even the BBM radio, or certainly CNBC, you only get half the story. And it's I think that they are almost intentionally, well, I mean, Andrew is absolutely convinced, they are intentionally only giving you half the story. Because in the education part of it, they're somehow part of the dumbing down of society. That when the government does this, you know, they could say, oh, by the way, we added money to the system today. You know, price of gold is going up because that really means there's more dollars. They absolutely omit the other side of the story. They'll talk about Fed lowers interest rates, and they'll say, well, we haven't for a while, but they'll say, that means your credit card interest and something else is going to go down. When in fact, it won't. It hasn't for 25 years. And he says that they actually, because CNBC is so worried about getting the chairman of the company on there, or somebody from the administration on there, or something, that they purposely, it's not really news. It's some sort of a, I mean, it, you know, he even said it, one of my favorite guests ever was Cheryl Atkinson, and he said she's
going to break her up, so keep going.
But he sent me a thing yesterday, evidently she sent him or something, and she's with what's his new broadcasting she's with?
Well, she's independent. Her show is.
No, she's not. Yeah. She's with this,
Her show airs on Sinclair Networks, but it's okay. Syndicated, no big deal. But she also writes independently. You can subscribe.
Right, she writes, but for the part that she does for Sinclair, they sent every single person something they had to read on the air that nobody agreed with, because that was their policy, because they didn't want to go against it. I haven't gone through it yet, but he goes, yeah, she had to read this thing on the air. that was like Sinclair, if you want to stay with us, everybody had to say this. I don't know if it was during COVID or what it was, but I mean, it's getting pretty intrusive, I think. But in its attempt to not really educate people, I think you could. And this is not that hard to explain, you want to.
I think it's two pronged, Tom. And prong number one is that media generally has picked sides, and so you're totally filtered based on a desired message, not based on, you know, what do we need to report? What do we factually need to report? And then also opinions that are disguised as factual reporting.
That's what I was getting to, by the way. Thank you for that.
So that's part one of it. Part two of it, though, and Cheryl talked about this when she was on the show, because I was on with her, with you and with her, and I remember very distinctly, and I think it's a really, really strong point, is that we have a lot of people, whether they've come through college journalism training and with ideology put in there, which they have very, very heavily, but in addition to that, they don't develop any subject matter expertise. So they know how to do an interview, they know how to write a story, they know how to put together production, you know, they know all of that technical stuff, but you go in with a question, they don't even have the expertise, not even close to the expertise, to ask a decent follow-up question. So you ask a question, you get the answer. and okay, next question. And nobody sits there and says, wait a second, I want to ask you a little more about that. I mean, you can ask it politely. You don't have to be, blunt, charged, challenging. But there are ways to do this. When I was doing, my basketball reporting side hustle, I learned really well how to ask questions that got very thorough answers and good follow-ups and all of that. It's not a hard skill, but I also knew the sport, so I had some subject matter expertise. If I were doing the interviews for somebody about, a new chemical breakthrough or something like that, I would not have the expertise to ask good follow-up questions. And so that's totally lacking in the media. That's a huge problem.
Is that on purpose?
I think the ideology that comes with a lot of the way interviews are conducted and the way news is reported is intentional. I think the lack of subject matter expertise, it could be at the levels of hiring where they say, well, I don't really care about having that kind of expertise on staff, but I don't think so. I think it's just people don't know. They don't know better. And if you were to think about that, think about if you were somebody who's maybe 35 years old now, and I worked really hard in high school. I got into one of the best journalism schools. I got into University of Missouri or Northwestern, or I think Columbia's has a pretty renowned one. So I get into one of those, and I study really hard, and then I work my way, because you're generally not going to jump right onto network reporting, and I work my way up, and I get on a major news network, and I find myself in doing these insipid interviews. At that point, if it dawned on me what was happening, I'd probably want to shoot myself.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess
you go through all of your life preparing, and you find out you aren't even close to prepared.
Well, that happens to a lot of people, right? I mean, in a lot of walks of life, and that's when you got to dig in even harder, right? But
now,
you,
the final piece of that, and you talked about it, you mentioned it. I want to get the CEO on for different corporate CEOs on, and if I push them too hard, they won't come on. So, there is the...
By the way, they're very straight about that. They want to know what you're going to ask them, and if it's something they don't want to ask, they don't come on.
Understood. And it's, I saw the same thing doing basketball coverage. Mike Bray never did this. Mike Bray was really, really good with the media and fair with the media. But I watched, people like Charlie Weiss or Brian Kelly, where they would just freeze out anybody who pushed them too hard. And the problem with doing that, especially if you look at, you're working in South Bend, you work for the South Bend Tribune or one of the local media outlets, and so many college towns are like this. If I don't have access to the coach, to that kind of reporting information, I don't have a job unless I want to cover high school football for a living.
Yeah, well...
So there is career threat there, and I think that probably finds its way through the media reporting system too. As people want to climb the ladder, they want to you may start out of school in a very small media market, and you work your way up, and you're trying to work your way up, get into Chicago or get into New York, LA, or even Indianapolis from here, and you're trying to move your way up. Well, you don't want to piss people off along the way, because you want to be the person who does get access. So there's a lot of competing interests here that I think consumers of media need to understand, because it isn't just a bunch of intrepid journalists trying to seek the truth. There's so much else going on there, and it is. The real importance, and we'll go back to Cheryl Atkinson, because I think she's a really good reporter. She digs into things. I was just reading some of her stuff about Fauci today and where she was, more than 5 years ago, and citing some of that and citing some of her attempts to get information out of him. And, the good news for all of us is that many of these journalists have become independent. They aren't tied into the networks anymore. They don't rely on them. And as a result, we are getting some better reporting, but you have to go out of your way to find it.
Which, yeah, but it's really... By the way, Ricky, if you see Larissa pop in, let me know.
I'll let you know.
But you, think of it as, Kevin, it's so... By the way, I'm not going to disagree with anything you just said, but that's bullshit. Why isn't John Capps writing for the Tribune? Why isn't Cheryl Atkinson writing for somebody where you don't have to go out of your way to find her, for God's sake?
She should because it's real simple, because they got tired of the constraints.
And it, well, it's
and that's all kinds of people. And, you know, there's people, I agree with them. There's, you know, guys like Glenn Greenwald, who in many ways I do agree with him, but in other ways I don't. Well, you know, he's like a Pulitzer Prize winning guy who, you know, has had a lot of major stories in his past. But long ago, he just said, screw it, I'm not working for these
people.
Well,
I'm trying to find the line, and Andrew was helping me out with it, and by the way, so are you. You know, the one I watch all day long is a CNBC, okay? I happen to think that what Bessent's doing is not so good, you know, especially on the inflation part. But I also know that if I'm in charge of CNBC, I don't want to freeze myself out to any interview with the guy, because that's a huge plus. Plus, if I really piss everybody off in the administration, who the hell knows if Steve Leisman's not invited to the, you know, the Federal Reserve press conference? I mean, there's stuff they can do to me if I either disagree or, in my mind, maybe tell the truth that really should have. I know whenever people get together, people are people, but that should be no part of news. It's this kind of slash between nobody needs news 24 hours a day or 12 hours a day, really. I mean, you need a ticker on the bottom.
It'll turn your brain into mush.
Yeah, but I'm saying it becomes not really news. It's telling the same story over and over again. It's all that kind of stuff. And getting people on there to try and discuss a problem, but by the way, get rid of them before they get a really chance to work it through and get some new people in. I mean, I get that. If you want to keep, well, I sort of get it. But I also know that I can't go too crazy about NVIDIA. You know, and maybe some of the stuff that, you know, Carl thinks they're doing. I can't be ranting on that for 2 hours and the next minute call up and get their CEO as a guest. So somehow along the line, there's a blur here between ratings, TV, and I think it's, I don't know if it's healthy or what it is, or maybe people think that it actually is news or something, but, and you can fool, you know, half the people all the time or whatever, but I don't know what the solution is, do you?
Actually, I am fond of the trend towards many really good journalists who are becoming independent. And I do think that's part of the solution. Whether we are able to get people to consume that is the challenge. But there is, but that has opened the door to some really, really good reporting. And I know I've shared some of it out to the group.
Don't we all do this, so I'm not just accusing you. Don't judge everybody by yourself. The rest of the world, well, in my world or whatever, wants to get their friggin' Tribune on the porch, and they want Mike Royko on the front page. That's how they're going to read him. I guess he could be at the local library where you could go find him, or he could be on some website, which nobody knew where that was 20 years ago. But I shouldn't have to do that. They're that good. They should be coming to my place. The Tribune shouldn't be afraid to put Mike Royko on the front page, but they are. And that's a problem. You're right. If I want to find Cheryl Atkinson, I'll ask you how to find her, and I'll find her, right? I mean, but that's not the point. I'm buying the damn paper. Why is she? Why can't I read John Cass in the Tribune, for God's sake?
I understand that, but when I expressed a measure of hope, part of the reason for that is because these folks are all over social media. Now, there's so much crap on social media that, you know, it is darn near impossible to be discerning, but it is changing somewhat to the point where, Cheryl Atkinson, Catherine Herridge, people like that are going to come across your feed, and you're going to have opportunities to see what their work is about. Then you can take it from there.
But I mean, I'll ask it another way. Even though I think he's become pretty successful on his own, How many people...
I used to subscribe. I wasn't reading it often enough to keep the subscription, but yeah, he's done well on his own.
Okay, but I mean, how many people would you say have the opportunity to read him per day than when he was in the Trib? I'm going to say a tenth of the people, if that.
No, it sort of depends on how many people were actually reading him when he was with the Trib.
Well, so. I always was. I mean, we got it the first thing ever. I actually Tom, read Mike Royko.
People by yourself.
Well, that's, I know. I mean, Royko could have been the first person, the first news thing I ever read before the sports section.
Everybody read Royko back in the day. Yes.
God, he was so funny, but he was such a grumpy old dude. God, did you ever meet him?
No, never met.
I met him once in the bar, but he was. I guess he and he was on he. They made the mistake. There was the first national 16-inch softball tournament. You know where they held it? Boy, so talk about showing my age. Soldier Field used to have this. Well, it was this big, huge place that held like 100,000 people. It was made for track and field. And they used to have auto races in there. Well, then when the Bears went over there, originally, they blocked in the one end zone and moved the field down. Right?
Yeah, they had the mini stadium on the other.
That's where the softball thing was. So Royko, they made the guy a color announcer for the softball. He had no idea, Kevin, how to be in front of a microphone. And they must not have had a cough switch or something. But if somebody yelled at him, he'd like insult the guy and swear back at him without turning the mic off. he belonged in the newspaper. let's put it that way. But he was funny. God, it was the year that McTello and those guys beat the Bobcats. Remember that? They were on the Strikers. He was the color announcer.
I remember all those, yeah.
Yeah, no, boy, those guys, they had some players, huh? I mean, that's when softball, well, they're still players, but I mean, those guys.
Yeah, I remember beating some of those guys in the Metro tournament.
Yeah, you couldn't beat all of them, though. I remember.
Nice, yeah.
I remember.
You just had to catch them in the morning, early in the tournament.
Yeah.
They come to play all day, and surprise, surprise, there's this good little team that's ready to knock them off.
Yeah, well, it's, I used to, I pitched against some really good teams, and just a little bit of an aside, is if you played in a pretty good neighborhood league, like, Monk Greenwood or someplace, every team had one or two guys that, if they didn't have to work, it would have been one hell, really good athletes and were really good players. But they knew it, and so did the other guys on their team. So the trick was to keep the guys off the bases ahead of them, right? And then, oh, by the way, because then the worst they could do is you get one run from the guy. But you could pitch those guys behind their head, Kevin, and they'd have to swing at it because they knew they were the hope for that team, right? So you couldn't, you didn't have to give them a strike anywhere. But you go play against the good teams, every guy in the lineup was good, and if you tried to junk the guy, they'd take four balls, walk the first, and the next guy was just as good, and you go, that didn't help. it's like a really good Major League Baseball team where everybody goes, all right, you want to put me on, the guy behind me is just as good as I am, and then you go, then you start really scratching your head going, what the hell is that all about, right? And Larissa's in, I hear. Larissa, how are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for coming in.
We're getting back to school.
Well, there you go.
A little bit of change of schedule and things like that. Welcome. Good morning.
Are you?
Did the kids walk in the door after you dropped them off, or did they wait for you to get away and then ditch school?
Well, I think they're too young to really understand the how to ditch school and the benefits of ditching school.
Well, you have to introduce them to their old buddy, their new buddy, Kevin. I'll teach them all the ropes.
There you go.
Larissa, you've been, every time I hear one of these retail sales reports, somehow or another the voice of Larissa pops into my head. And when they talk about, I don't know, I've never heard of anybody, I'll go through it briefly, explain exactly how, the numbers come from the bottom up, being the bottom up being you being a mom or me going to the store, and how they say, well, like Walmart, well, the consumer is strong compared to last year, blah, blah, blah. They're up a couple percent, and I'm thinking, okay, the prices are up 5%. Larissa says, of course she's spending as much as last year, even though she's not getting as much as she was getting. And by the way, I think you said you had to cut out breakfast on Sunday with the kids or something. But the raw numbers, if you just look at them, they look good. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's health for you and health for the average person, which somehow adds up to be the economy. And I don't know where, other than coming from analysis like you give, where anybody can get that sense of what's going on. I mean, is it anywhere to be found? I mean, I thought I knew something about it, but then when you explained it, let's say, better, I think I understand it more. But does anybody else get a clue of what you're talking about?
Well, it's interesting you brought that up. I'm teaching a financial a survey class of essentially finance, and one of the, I think in week two, maybe it's even week one, I try to explain how households and the financial markets interact with each other. So we've got businesses, we've got the financial markets, and we have households, and how household savings are really what is utilized then for investment into businesses. So we use our savings to issue bonds for corporations. We issue savings by investing in firms and buying stock. And the financial markets gathers our capital to be able to, our savings to be able to do that. And if you look at the savings rate, it's just dropped so much. We're saving, and again, the savings is what gets pumped into the businesses. We're looking at saving, I think, around 3 or 4% at this point. And where I'm going with this is,
listen, does that include, I'm sorry to interrupt, but does that include, I don't think it does, but I'm wondering if maybe it should, does that include people's normal contribution to their 401k at work, the savings rate? It should, but does it?
I think it does. I don't know for sure.
Because if it's only 4% and includes that, that's really awful.
Well, I believe it does. And again, the 401ks and things that you're saving for retirement, it's money then that's being pumped into the financial markets. And that's where most of the money is being pumped into the financial markets.
Cool. Well, Larissa's given the
most people don't have their 401k. If they have a Roth IRA established with their company, they might be investing that. They don't necessarily have separate accounts that they're saving, let alone an emergency capital just in case. And so my point is, as prices go up, and I'm having to reduce how I'm spending. And there are certain necessities that just absolutely have to be spent on. Again, if something happens to one of the kids, they need school supplies, they need after-school things, they need medical treatment, I'm spending it, and my savings rate's going to deplete. Now, interestingly, because, again, the question then is, well, but the stock market's going up. The financial markets are expanding. How do you make that reconciliation? And that's where we start to talk about your point where, well, overall, Walmart looks good. So we've got a 5% increase in, you know, Walmart sales, stock market goes up, and then we have, for the household, if you have an investment in Walmart, then theoretically your overall wealth is going to go up. Very similar to if the housing markets, the housing prices go up, you then theoretically have more wealth. And I'm using that word theoretically because it's not wealth that you can actually go back and use to spend on your kids' medical needs, right? It's you don't get any of that appreciation of your house until you finally sell it.
Well, you could if you want and get the which is what people are doing, is getting the loan on the house to pay down the credit cards.
Ooh, that's tough.
Well, that's what, I mean, Nancy says that's a big, and she went through, I don't know if you're listening on Monday, but Nancy's our mortgage lady, and she says that some of the people, even though you could do the math from this, I'm sure you've probably gone through this in your class, because if somebody's paying, even if they have a mortgage at 3%, and they've got, you know, 60 grand left, and all of a sudden their credit cards are, 21%, and they got 60 grand on the credit card, you're better off going to get a $120,000 loan on the house if you have the equity in there at 7, and because if you do the math, it's better than half at 21 and half at 3. And she goes, there's a lot of that going on, which is pretty bad.
It's really bad, and it's scary, and it's disappointing, and it's heartbreaking.
Tom, what you're asking ultimately is, are we spending? Yes. We're spending in dollars. Are we spending in volume? You know, what's unit sales look like? And that's a harder number to get to grab when you're looking at retailers and so on. It's in there. They know. They know darn well what those numbers are. The question is, does the public know, or are we just looking at the revenue number and saying, oh, they beat on revenue. Very good. Nice. The consumer's strong. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot, and Larissa just, you know, got into it a little bit. It isn't, you know, we figured out how to live day to day. People are pretty ingenious. And so, you know, I think most people or most families have figured out how to navigate the current price level on a day-to-day basis. It's those things that pop up, those one-timers. It's the car broke down. It's the kid got sick. We have a hospital bill. We have, you know, whatever it is. And, that's a big deal. Different phenomenon. I just want to mention this just because I did it yesterday. I can't remember if Carl brought this up a couple days ago or if I heard it elsewhere. But where you're seeing this is in, some of that discretionary spending. Traveling is one of them. And the price of a hotel room has dropped precipitously. So, Carl, was that you that brought that up?
Yeah, the CPI report said that July, month over month, was down 4%. Now, by the way, July is the peak summer travel month. Because in June, there's some demand there. May and early June is when the kids get out of school, and most of the kids are going back to school in August. So so the travel season for August is truncated. July, in addition to having July 4th, which is a big travel holiday, right, is also right in the middle of that band. So it gets, you know, the whole month worth of exposure. But I went chasing the big boy train during that period of time, and yeah, prices were down, and not just here.
Carl, okay? why didn't a guy like you just get a seat on the train?
Well, because first off, there weren't any. There were in a couple of places, but okay, yeah, if I like lighting $100 bills on fire, I could have done that. But that pretty much is what I would have had to do.
Yeah. So to finish the story, I took that cue because I have a surgery coming up in Cleveland, at Cleveland Clinic, and I this is something I have to have done regularly for a little while until the problem goes away completely. And when I do it, I check into there's a residence inn right up the way. My daughter accompanies me because there's always got to be a responsible adult when you go for surgery. And so we get a suite, and Amy gets her room, and I get my room for sleeping, and then we come back the next day. Now, I fill that in because I went and checked, because I booked in June, I booked the room for the next appointment, and the suite was $320. And so I went and looked at the price after hearing Carl talk about it, and it's now down, to $250, so whatever it was, all in, with taxes, I dropped from $320 to $265 by canceling and rebooking. So, there's an indicator there, but that's just to fill in the blanks that goes with what the data is saying, and that is that people aren't traveling, or if they're traveling, they're traveling cheaper.
Well, I want to push a little bit further on what Larissa's talking about, because there's a political lie here, and boy, I'm not going to say it. Boy, it just
that's the redundant phrase, isn't it?
Well, but I'm saying it's been going on for.
This is when you say, "Oh yeah, that's pretty funny, Kevin." You keep going.
Well, we're hearing Larissa describe what every man is seeing, and there isn't a person around that's going to debate what she just said. It's as obvious as a nose on your face, especially a nose on my face. But somewhere along the line, people are telling you how good you're doing, and we're getting this money creeping in. Larissa's seeing the prices go up. She's getting stuff. She's making it. She's like doing what Kevin's saying. She's making the decisions. Are we still eating? You still got a place to live, but you're cutting out this, that, the other thing. And yet you're going to have people tell you that, oh, by the way, the CPI is here, and when it really isn't. So even if you get a 3% raise, you think you're doing good, but you're really not, because the inflation really is 5, and it's not the 2 they're telling you about, or 3. But politically, somewhere along the line, you keep pulling on this rubber band. I'm saying the current administration, in my opinion, is pretty good at this, but they're the last of like 5 administrations that have done it since 2000. Someplace, somewhere, there's got to be somewhat of an end game here, and I don't know what it is. I mean, because you're right, Kevin. People have, have dealt with, like Larissa just described, dealing with an everyday basis. But then Kenny Pulcheri, when I was listening on Tuesday, said that he said it on the air, so I'm not talking out of school, that his wife thought she was having some breathing problems. Rush her to the hospital. She's there like an hour. They give her an EKG. Yeah, that's fine. And they take the enzyme test, and she's not having a heart attack. And they go, well, it must have been, some indigestion. You look fine to us. It's like $11,000. Well, now, okay, as good as Larissa's been working on this stuff, if child number one sprains an ankle at the soccer game, that there's no way Larissa's planning for that $10,000 X-ray on the ankle, which is probably what's going to come out to be. I mean, where are we going here? I guess, and how can we get back without something really bad happen?
Well, you're seeing some of the backlash, and I'm going to throw this back to Larissa, because I want to hear what she gauges on it. But we've talked about this in the last week, I think, as well, and that is that you have so many young people. When you're seeing this, this new appeal of socialism, you have so many young people who experience the promise. A promise that if you work hard, you go to college, you're going to get a job, you're going to have a great career, all that's going to happen. And that hasn't unfolded for so many students. And as a result, people are, there's an underlying anger that goes with it, but there's also an appeal of any other system. I don't care what it is. It's just not the status quo. And I don't have as many traditional students, so I would be real interested, because Larissa has a lot of the traditional college students who come in from high school and work their way through towards their bachelor's degrees. Are you seeing that phenomenon unfolding, or how are you seeing that phenomenon unfolding amongst your students?
So you're asking how my students are handling their finances?
No, I'm more along the lines of, I think there's a lot of people that go to college with optimism that this is making a better life.
Right.
And then they get to be 27, 28 years old, and we've totally crushed that optimism because careers haven't unfolded in the way that we thought. And that shows up in the numbers a lot. Carl will tell you that when we look at the reports a lot, that college graduates have not been doing well in the economy in general, in the employment numbers in general. So, we see a lot of this kind of stuff. So, my question is, what's the level of optimism? Because I see a non-traditional student typically. I see people who want to skill up, and they're not necessarily looking to, move up the corporate ladder to be vice presidents and so on. They're just saying, I want a job that pays well. I want something that gives me some comfort in my lifestyle. And that could be IT jobs, that could be supply chain related jobs, whatever. And you're getting a much more traditional business student. So I'm curious about what the level of optimism is there, and how is it affecting their choices of what they study?
Unfortunately, my students have so far been not optimistic. They don't seem to have any ambition to ever own a home. They don't think that they'll really be. They think Social Security won't be there for them. They almost seem despondent for how much they're going to have to save for retirement. It's or at least the students I've worked with recently, there isn't this overwhelming optimism of, I can't wait to get married and have children and start my life. Most students that I've spoken to have even gone as far as saying, I don't know that I will have children or buy a house and do these things that we would traditionally think of as adult success.
That's kind of scary.
Well, and it does show up in things like, you know, what are our, you know, what's the population growth rate and what's going on with that? So, you know, that correlates to some of the things that we're seeing in the data. And that's why I asked. I was just really, really curious about what, you know, what you're seeing.
Yeah, it's a weird, it's almost depressing.
I think it probably is. It sounds like it is depressing.
My follow-on question would be, well, then why are you in college if there's no point?
Well, and I think, and I could be very wrong about this, but and we've talked about this before on this program, there are trade schools, like HVAC and things like that, electricians, plumbers, that can outperform a lot of college graduates and outperform in salary.
Yeah, and sorry about doing that to you.
What's that?
No, I said sorry about doing that to you, because that is what we do.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, I think a lot of students don't realize how much more money they could make as a skilled professional in something like plumbing. And I would hope that at some point, let me back up. I think there's a lot of pressure for parents to want the best for their children, and they have a lack of understanding of what that truly means. And the best for their children might be a trade where they will have steady work, they will have higher wages, and I think those are great things, and the parents don't know about this. Or they might not know about it unless they've had a plumbing emergency. And then they quickly realize how much the plumber makes.
Well, you're talking about an independent plumber or electrician or something like that, which is different from somebody, a blue-collar factory worker, because all those places left. And left, you know, it's almost like I keep thinking of all the different guests we've had in the last 3-4 weeks, and I'm going to try and sum it up. There's a circle here. I'm not going to say a circle jerk, but it's pretty close to it.
More like a circle of hell.
Yeah. Well, because when Eric was on, and Eric's a retired Columbia professor, he was on Wednesday, and he said when he went to Columbia, he went to school there and then taught there. But he was also a beat reporter in Washington on the streets. I mean, he's had a huge career, but he was saying when he went, it was, you know, a semester was $750, which is roughly the same time that Kevin and I were in school. And we went to Notre Dame, which is a little bit more than Columbia, but it still was at the $3,000 range for the year. And he said, you went to school in those days, I mean, there were people that took pre-med, and there were people that took engineering, but by and large, you went to school to learn how to learn and to expand both your social gifts and your mind to the point where not a whole lot of people went to school, unless I said you were in engineering or chemistry or something, did that as a way to, it wasn't a vocational school. I mean, I came out of Notre Dame in economics and I went to business school, but I didn't, it wasn't like if I didn't get a job in, well, as the price went up and up and up, all of a sudden it came down to, well, wait a minute, you got to be going there to get, quote, a job in something. So nobody really wanted the general education anymore. Nobody wanted to go, well, this is a very generalization here, you want to go become an IT person. I mean, Jean Marabito was on a few years ago, and she was the head of the engineering admissions in Michigan. She goes, everybody wants to be in computer engineering because that's where the money is. Nobody wants to be in civil. Nobody wants to be in, you know, nobody wants to go build bridges. All the money's in. Well, now Dr. Johnson, our buddy Blade, he's a retired psychologist, and he's doing work in New York now because these IT people are all getting laid off at age 38, 45, and they have, psychologically, they're a mess, which ties exactly into what you were saying, Larissa. He goes, in New York, if your apartment is $10,000 a month, you've got like a 60-day window to find another job, or you're screwed. because nobody's got, you know, 20 grand in a bank in case you get laid off. Plus, if you, all they've ever done in their life is IT. So what you're saying is almost like you're starting the wheel, and the wheel has gone over and over, and now it's running back over us, it seems, a little bit. But expand on what I just said, please, because it seems like this is all kind of coming together in sort of a bad way. I didn't even mention the student loan debt on top of everything else.
I'll take it to start. Look, one of the things, and you know, I just got done, so classes for us start on Monday, but we have in our curriculum and it's a required course in every curriculum. It's a student success course, and it's basically a course in how to be a successful college student. But we spend a lot of time on professionalism. Now, I have not taught the course before this week, but I decided as department chair that if I could get a room full of brand new IT students, that would probably be a good thing if they got to know their department chair right off the bat. So it's a 1-hour course that you can do it over 8 weeks, but you can do it over 4 nights as long as we, you know, get enough hours in the evening. So it's been some long days. I've been getting home about 10 o'clock every night after working all day. But I digress. The point being that I have just spent a lot of time on not technical material, but some of it is on study skills, research skills, understanding information, understanding the difference between data, information, and knowledge, which is kind of important because, you know, people take data as information and it just isn't. So we have that that aspect of it, but we also spent a lot of time on, you know, how do you recognize your personal strengths. I spent a lot of time last night on networking, how to build a professional network, how to just thrive in an event, how to just walk up to strangers and have conversations in a professional setting, you know, all of those kinds of things that we call soft skills. Now, why do that? Now, I called a lot of audibles during the week. There's a lot of course content in there, and I said, no, this is stuff that my people really need to know, and so I would give them some different content. I bring this up because when you start looking at what people need to be successful in it 10 years out, and you start looking at what the trends are, and technology drives a lot of these trends, that when you consider what people need to be successful, there's a fair amount of it that is technology, being technology savvy and knowing how to use tech tools. That's important. But there is more of it is, you know, the same stuff that we've always emphasized. Can you work with teams? Can you do some research and report back and quickly? You know, what are your critical thinking skills like? All of those kinds of things. Now, think about that. Think about just the idea of critical thinking and apply it to, to what we know about the pandemic response. Just look at it in those terms. How big a lack of critical thinking was there amongst the population? There's been a big splurge lately in some of the social media stuff showing people who were just harshly critical of anybody who asked questions. And I'm not talking about people like, you know, the scientists who were trying to circle the wagons or the drug companies. I'm talking about someone like Terry Bradshaw just going completely off on Aaron Rodgers because he wouldn't get a vaccine. Mary Carrillo, the tennis analyst, going off on Novak Djokovic. You know, these kind of people who were just total sheep on the whole thing, that had the wherewithal, that had the time and the funding and everything that they needed if they wanted to get some information, get some real information that they could digest it for themselves. You know, they could have listened to Stocks and Jocks, because Carl was taking it apart on a regular basis. And I know for my own person, I was tracking the state of Michigan county by county by county, because I was looking at this and saying, what's the policy around here for Southeast Michigan versus Southwest Michigan? They look totally different. And thinking what folly all of this was. So, you know, I think it's there. There's a lot of information there, but we don't teach people how to think about it. We don't even, all we got out of media for data, we got data. We didn't get information. We got data. Big, scary numbers. We had the 500,000 death. We had the 1.5 million cases, all of those kinds of things. But nobody was saying, what are the trends? What are the death rates with people with comorbidities? Break it out by age. What does it look like by age group? You know, how were kids affected versus how were senior citizens affected? All of those kinds of questions that people should be asking, and instead we just heard the big scary number and did what we were told. Anyway, enough of that rant. Anybody else can react to that if you want.
I would say I want to get back to more of the economic stuff, but I will say this, that we had was on the show, and I of course, you know, Carl was all over the stuff, so, and he's a great source, but somehow or another, I didn't even know I had him, but I must have a few we have a few people that listen in the UK, and we must have at least one listener in South Korea, because I was getting emails from them that was really going right with what Carl was saying in terms of, in the UK, we're here, they were telling people, you know, even if you had it, which I did, by the way, and had all the antibodies, that you needed to go out and get a vaccine because the antibodies only lasted a few weeks.
And boosters, yeah. Tom. Get your boosters.
And meanwhile, I was getting feedback from somebody in the UK that they actually was doing studies on how the antibodies were lasting 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. They were lasting as long as everybody was gone. So there was you know, that told me, wow, I don't need a booster here. I've already got it. And plus, in South Korea, they went through a... This is interesting. I probably never told you this. You might not even want to hear it, but they somehow found a young kid. I say young kid. He's 22 or something. How they figured out that he got it on a certain day. It must have been like at a party where everybody had it or something. So they grabbed this kid and basically put him, you know, in a hospital where they tested him constantly. And they went through the entire routine from the day he was he got it to the day he didn't have it anymore and had his antibodies. And I read that and I was so scared and so appalled, because what they said was the kid gets the thing. They started, you know, taking his temperature and stuff, and he got a little bit of a fever, and it was in his blood, and he became what they would call a super spreader. And at his peak, he was given, you know, whatever, when you breathe, how many little pieces of a virus are in your breath, was some incredible number before he even had any idea that he had it. And then it's the minute he got any kind of a symptom, which were still pretty light, the ability to, you know, infect somebody else dropped like a stone. So by the time he knew he had it, he almost wasn't even a problem to anybody. But the couple days before, where he never even would have dreamed that he had it, he was so infectious it was scary. And at the end of the 10 days where it worked its all the way through, or 7 days, the kids said was, there wasn't a day there I wouldn't have gone and played basketball. I never felt that bad. And as soon as I read that, I go, we got a problem here. Because how the hell are you going to stop that?
Yep.
You know,
and well, you know, look, the reality of it is we are now finding out. By the way, I'm assuming that you know that Bill Ackman had his daughter suffer a really nasty brain bleed fairly recently.
Ugh.
And he is now out intending, he's bought some land, he's putting together a, she's screwed, by the way. They, you know, the hospitals were like, look, operating in this situation, trying to solve this is it's one of those things. Well, you might be able to solve the immediate problem, but most people end up in hospice, and it's ugly and doesn't get better. And there are things that happen that that's what the likelihood of the outcome is going to be.
Well, that really sucks. Wow.
Well, and you know, and she is kind of getting some function back, but it's kind of sort of played out anyway. The reason I bring this up is that one of the things that came up during this is that, I don't know if you remember, but when the shots first came out, he was jumping up and down that everybody had to go get them. Okay. Now, later on,
he became considerably more skeptical of this. After, of course, jumping up and down, never saying, by the way, I was full of dark, smelly stuff and spewing it all over people and telling them they were evil bastards if they didn't do it and whatever have you. By the way, one of the things that has come out in this is that Fauci and his pals and everybody else knew that there was a signal in here that if you got this thing and then tried to get pregnant, or you're in first trimester when you took it, there was a very serious risk of it inducing miscarriages.
Okay.
All right. Oh, by the way, Bill Ackman and his wife had like 7 of them sequentially.
Really?
When he tried to have another kid after this period in time. All right.
So, Larissa, what's this all got to do with economics?
Well, let me refocus, and I want to throw it back to Larissa because I'm going to check out on you guys anyway. But the reason I brought it up in the first place, because I'm the one that got us off track here, and I didn't want to relitigate anything as it relates to COVID. What I did want to do, though, and this sort of gets back to your economics questions and people's understanding of the situation, is that we aren't good at the critical thinking part. That's why I told you the story about the class. Yes. I was teaching class and so on, is because we don't know how to ask the questions. And that's, you know, there's opportunity there. I think there's a really, really good opportunity for us if we want to seize it as a country, as a group. You know, you pick whatever entity you want. But right now, we just don't have people that are very good at this. And as a result, we wind up accepting economic news. We wind up accepting all kinds of news. And instead of doing it critically, we tend to align ideologically and just accept what our side says. Now I'll shut up and let you guys talk.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, there's another element to this, though, Chief, which just this morning, the op-ed on Fox News from Les Rubin saying, well, you know, we've got this debt problem. Oh, no, really?
Yeah, really?
Yeah, really. The government doesn't will not do anything about the fact that they're running a 6%+ fiscal deficit on a continual basis. By the way, as I've pointed out, and as I started yelling about back in 1990, in the 1990s, the locus of this is in CMS, which implicates, of course, the entire medical system, because that's what CMS pays for, right? Incidentally, the latest MTS, which is out through July, so we've got 2 more months in the fiscal, shows that CMS has spent 13.4% more this fiscal year than last, okay? And by the way, that happens to be $2.328 trillion thus far. If you look at the current deficit that the federal government is running, approximately 130% of it is that CMS spent.
Well, I'm gonna ask Larissa a question here.
Here's why it's important, Chief. How do you tell a young person that this monster is literally eating everything and is responsible for all of the inflation, and yet nobody will do a damn thing about it from either side of the aisle?
That's what I want to. Larissa, I was on. I used to go on Joan Esposito's show once in a while, and. Well, actually, one day I was on, and their tower got hit by lightning. I think they might have blamed me, but I never got invited. But she said to me, and she's a terrific lady, and she's been in Chicago News for a long, long time. And she said, "Well, I don't have any debt." And I said something really foolish that I shouldn't have. I go, "Joan, you sort of do." And she goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "I'm looking." I says, "You're a taxpayer, right?" And she goes, "Yeah." I said, "I'm looking right here on the national debt clock. Debt per taxpayer is $360,000. She says, "Thanks for ruining my day."
Oh, no.
and I was, but I mean, what is when you're there's a piece of paper here that I lost, but there was an article written by somebody when I first started the show, and it had to do with people's thinking, and the people you and Kevin and you talk to, and you, for instance, you got a real job. Well, your job happens to be in economics, where you were part of the job is keeping track of what's going on in the world. But if it wasn't, you know, if you were a surgeon, that wouldn't be part of your job, right? So the guy's conclusion was, you really don't have enough time to research the stuff. Your vote, even though you want to vote, everybody knows if everybody felt this way, there wouldn't be an election, but your vote walking down the block, one vote doesn't mean crap, basically. So people get this, so they realize they can't really affect everything, so they drop back in thinking. What you end up doing is picking a side. I sort of like, you know, what the people on the right are talking about. I sort of like what the people on the left are talking about. Therefore, whatever the issue is, I'm going to look and see what my side is on, and that's where I'm at, which is so different than me. I want to look at it myself and make a determination, and I don't want anybody telling me one way or the other. I'm not going to ask you guys what your opinion is to help me out. But do you think that's true, that he says, you know, you just can't, as he's saying, the trading floor, you can't take a drink out of a fire hydrant. So much stuff is coming at you. You're either on the right and believe that's the way, or you're on the left and believe the other way is not the way or something, and you essentially don't have the time or the inclination to look at every issue and decide on your own. You think there's truth to that?
Larissa? Yeah, you know, I'm not sure that there... And so you're questioning whether or not there is truth to understanding what side you are on, the understanding debt?
No, what I'm saying is, I don't know if you remember our last conversation when I asked even your junior class, if you put, you know, tariffs up on the blackboard, boy, talking about showing my age,
blackboard. Yeah, sure.
If you put tariffs on the blackboard, could anybody in class, if you said, okay, we're going to put a tariff on a Mercedes, could anybody work it through? What happens to the Mercedes? Who pays? Where the price goes? Who might drop their price? What happens to Cadillac? Do they then raise their price? And your response, which I cannot believe how incredible it was, you said, well, nobody could do that, but within 10 minutes, everybody's going to be arguing based on their political beliefs. I don't know if you remember that answer. And I thought that was startling that you said that. I'm sure it's, which is essentially what I just said, right? You figure out, okay, well, this administration likes tariffs, so they must be good, or this administration I don't like, so they must be bad. And not one person can really tell you how it all works its way through. That's pretty scary, isn't it?
Well, and it's when we went into war, there was a major change in oil prices. So in my risk management class, I said to the students, let's talk about what happened to oil prices over the weekend. And the first two or three comments were all about politically whether or not we should have gotten into war. And I thought, that's not my question.
Right.
Like, whether you agree or disagree doesn't, to some extent, matter. We are in this situation. Prices are being impacted. How does that impact you directly? How does that impact the greater economy? And the students couldn't get past whether or not they agreed or disagreed with going into war. For the most part, most students disagreed. But it lost track of any kind of genuine conversation about how different events impact market prices.
I know you're very young, but if you're my age, all you have to do is say there's going to be a draft. And I guarantee you that you would have had everybody disagreeing with the war.
Right.
Because with the Vietnam thing, I was a little young for that. But I tell you what, if you think the next week you're going to be in the jungle with a gun, somebody shooting at you, your views are a little bit different or more focused, shall we say.
Yeah. Right. And I want to chime in, too, because, you know, I get some of the same conversation as Larissa does, that, you know, that there are events that are going to think. So, you know, if I'm teaching, for instance, a supply chain class, then tariffs are a big deal as part of that. You know, it's part of the purchasing equation. It's part of the demand planning equation. It's cost structure, lean, everything factors into that. And and that's really important. And it is, you know, we get back to, you know, how do you think about these things? I don't want people aligned. So you got to let the politics go and say, we are going to look at what is, not what should be. We are going to look at what is. How does that impact you, and how will you react to that? That's how, you know, that's how we teach people to think, not, you know, not letting them get away with the ideological response. Is that, Larissa, you agree with that?
Oh, fully. And most times in classes, I will start the beginning of the semester saying we are only talking about finance and financial markets topics. This isn't the place, and quite frankly, I don't have the time in my classroom or the luxury to debate some of these topics. I also, to your point about critical thinking, a lot of my students have that knee-jerk reaction, war is bad, and I fully agree that war is bad, but they haven't done any deeper thoughts for why are we getting into this, where is the actual conflict coming from, how did we spend the last 10 years getting to this point, and that's a big piece that's missing, and again, that's not appropriate for a finance class.
Yeah. And just to echo that, and this will help, you know, listeners understand it, and maybe others too, is when Larissa says we don't have time, one of the things that you have to understand in the course, and this goes back to some of what you and I discussed earlier, is each course has a list of learning objectives, and we have to address those. And you know what? None of those learning objectives speak to politics. none of so as much as that makes for some good classroom discussion, I still have to teach my class to where in each unit I am hitting the learning objectives and making sure that the students, you know, see and understand the material, and that we can do some before and after competency testing and all of those kinds of things. So it does get to be a matter of, I would love to have this discussion, and I suppose anybody wants to stick around for the entire afternoon, we could probably do it and have a lot of fun doing it, but I don't have time for that in the classroom right now.
Right.
Well, I'll give you a quick exception to that. I took Milton Friedman for The Theory of Price. He hated it, and so did we. It was just a bazillion curves. Larissa, you would, after chapter one, you'd fall asleep and never wake up, and with nothing but calculus and supply curves. And he hated it. He didn't even finish the book. It was a manuscript. If any go, so you could knock him off topic easy, because he wanted to get knocked off topic. He didn't care if he ever covered this stuff. But that I think is an unusual situation.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to drop off. Right. I have to go meet my lab technician in a half hour. So I got to drop off and head over to campus.
And I apologize. I also have to drop off. Today's an anomaly. I have a faculty meeting at 8:30.
You know what? I loved having you back. It's such an addition. I hope you know some of the stuff you say and how long it sticks with us.
Well, thank you very much, and I look forward to being back on Friday if this okay. is still okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's absolutely. SP Futures up 39, NASDAQ Futures down up 219. We got gold in a moan here. We got all kind of stuff. We're going to go to a quick break, come back, and Carl and I are going to solve all these problems, and he's going to tell me exactly how the Fed wrote this check, because I don't know how the hell, or not the Fed, the Treasury, because I'm not sure I know. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks. Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Right now. Blowing up Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Ricky on the board. S&P Futures up 37. NASDAQ Futures up 210. Boy, it was fun having Larissa. And, boy, talk about let two professors talk, for God's sake, her and Kevin, because they're doing the same stuff. Dow Futures up 297. Over in Asia, and these guys have been bouncing all over the place, but mainly down. But let's see where they are today. The individual stocks, I've got Goldman Sachs up 10, Caterpillar, which goes up and down every day, up 13. Mostly everything is green here today. Nikkei's down 200. That's pretty calm for them. They had a huge down day the other day, like 3%, and recovered some yesterday. That's 0.3%. Hang Seng up 310. That's 1.2%. So they're bouncing back. They had a couple bad days this week, too, but now they're bouncing back. Shanghai up 1. We'll call that absolutely flat. Over in Europe, DAX up 78.3%. FTSE up 21.2%. CAC up 14.2%. So moderately bullish over in Europe as well. Bonds unchanged at 4.70 on the 10-year. This made it higher. I'm going to say it made it to, it didn't make it to 5. But best since here's the headline. Longer dated Treasury yields hold steady after Bessent's bond buyback rally fizzles out. It only took a day for the stuff to bounce back, which that's a little nerve. Get Carl's view on that too. That's a little nerve wracking. I thought it would have lasted longer than that. It's oil up 40 cents, 87.23. That's to the moon. RBOB is up 7 cents, 333. So probably you're over 4 wherever you are in your gas. Gold up another $69, 46.40. It's impossible. I have a huge gold position for people. I'm having real trouble staying ahead of this. I haven't seen a move like this in forever. Silver up $1.30, 69.50. Foreign exchange, we got the dollar. The pound is almost back up to 117. It was down under 115 for a while, but now it's almost back to 117. I'm sorry, the euro. The British pound is 136.5. That, I think, got under 134. Now, the yen is hanging under 160, so nobody's had to redo that again. The intervention we did 2 weeks ago, thankfully. Crypto up 4,000, 76,699. So let me get this straight. They pour money into the system, gold, silver, and Bitcoin go to the moon. Duh. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:34 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 65 degrees right now with a high of 81. A shower in spots this morning, then a heavy thunderstorm late this afternoon. Tonight, more possible thunderstorms, otherwise mainly clear and humid with a low of 65 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 90 degrees right now with a high of 113. Dangerously hot, risk of heat stroke or dehydration today. Tonight will be clear to partly cloudy and very warm with a low of 90 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's, 19 minutes. We're looking at 33 minutes. Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 29 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th is 22 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 is 23 minutes. MLB, yesterday the Sox lose to Braves 2-0. And today we got Mets at White Sox, 6:40 p.m. Reds at Diamondbacks, 8:40 p.m. And Cubs at Mariners at 9:10 p.m. For the NFL preseason, week 2 started yesterday with Raiders beating Texans 22-20 and 49ers beat Chargers 41-17. Bears face Bengals in Cincinnati tomorrow at 6 p.m. And that's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
So, Carl, which is worse as I'm staring at my debt clock? Just when you thought you could take the number of $40 trillion national debt and go have a beer with somebody last night and say, boy, we're at $40 trillion. Guess what? We're at $40 trillion, 55 billion. We're firing off that $40 trillion number.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I think that yesterday. You weren't on. It was yesterday. I hit my stopwatch. I got one, these red ones. I don't even use the one on my phone, right? 21 seconds, $1 million. A new record.
You got to wonder what the story is with that to some extent, right? But on the other hand, do you really? Because, you really kind of shouldn't, right?
Well, it's nothing you can sort of focus on, because if you did, what good is it? You drink too many beers if you focused on it.
Well, yeah. There's... one of the things that I think is so interesting, like I said a little earlier on the show, you got this op-ed out here, right, that just popped up. Hey, we got a debt problem. Well, duh.
Yeah.
Right? Is this supposed to be some piece of earth-shattering news? Well, obviously, no, it isn't. But the thing that really bothers me with all of this that's going on right now is that here we are. Yeah, we got a debt problem. Yeah, Congress has a deficit spending problem. Yes, oh, by the way, everyone's screaming about, what Bessent's doing and, the attempt at forcing down the long end, which, by the way, blew up in his face. It's going to continue to blow up in his face. You have all of these corporations, as I have pointed out on the show and have pointed out a couple other times, too, to other people,
NVIDIA is out there with a $5 trillion market cap. Why are they trying to syndicate a $500 billion debt offering? In the best case scenario, that puts $25 to $30 billion a year permanently on their balance sheet as an interest expense. Now, if they really have
That's if they get 5%.
Well, if they get 5 or 6, yeah. Right? If they get 6, it's 30. All right. By the way, corporations never pay debt off, which means that doing this puts that on their sheet for whatever the duration is, and then whatever it rolls at, they have to pay. If you can't pay when it rolls, you're dead, right? I mean, that's the way it works, all right? So now, given that they have a $5 trillion market cap, why don't they issue $500 billion worth of stock, 10%?
All right, real quick, before you go any further.
And if they, Chief, if they did that, their interest expense on that's zero, right?
All right, I'm going to ask you a stupid question that I should know the answer of. Does anybody use a sinking fund anymore?
Oh, absolutely not. And so, you know, there's the other part of the problem, right? Duh. Should we be using a sinking? Well, yes, absolutely. Not only
for the benefit of our listeners, you probably haven't heard that term ever. It used to be if companies went out, especially maybe didn't have the world's best rating, if you went out and bought and borrowed $10 million, you had to put $1 million away every year. So at the end of 10 years, you had the $10 million. Nobody believed that you would put nothing away and all of a sudden magically write a check for $10 million 10 years from now. It was called a sinking fund. I haven't heard of one of those in 20 years. Have you?
Well, back when I lived in Florida, the school board came out with one of their infamous, which they all do, the infamous, we need another bond issue, right? Which, of course, is going to go on in property taxes. And I showed up at the public meeting that they, by law, have to hold. And everyone gets their 2 minutes. And I looked at all of them, and the purported purpose for this was roofs and cafeteria chillers, right? And I got up in front of the microphone and I said, excuse me, why aren't you all in prison? And the reason you should all be
in
prison...
Well, that went over like a fart in church, but go ahead.
I'm sure it did. I said, and the reason you should all be in prison is you all have fiduciary responsibility as board members of this organization, and given that fiduciary responsibility, there is supposed to be a sinking fund for everything that has a service life and then would be expected to need to be replaced, including a roof and a chiller.
Yeah, those things would be two big things, actually.
Those would be two very expensive things that you would expect to have a service life, and after 20 years or 30 years or whatever it is,
you can't be after 30 years, we need a roof? Duh.
Well, duh, yeah. Right. And so, by the way, the bond issue went down in the election. That got written up in the paper that I did this to them. It looked like I had literally shown up with a knife and assassinated, cut their heads off. But here's the thing. Not a single one of them had anything other than the blubbering baby spittle, 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 spittle thing in response to this. All right. And yet this, you look at what's going on right now in this data center nonsense. You have the essence of the problem is that everybody is playing FOMO within the corporate world, fear of missing out. By God, if our competitor has this AI thing and we're going to get screwed, right? And you know, they're going to eat us for breakfast. Okay. And oh, by the way, if I take the game playing out of, for example, Amazon's earnings, which by the way, in their supposed results, were a gain on unrealized assets in the investment that they've made into these firms. If you took that out of the sheet, because incidentally, that's a speculative gain, because these are, in many cases, private companies, all right? It's a speculative
gain. How is that different than the old days goodwill?
Well, Chief, it's the same thing that Washington Mutual was doing with negative amortization capitalized interest, okay, when you get down to it's the essence is the same thing. Is this guy took on debt, that's an asset. Okay, by the accounting rules, that has to go on your sheet, right? But the fact of the matter is it's a doubtful asset because you don't know if the guy can pay.
And until he does, it's not money. And yet, this has been spiking. I read something, and I just did some quick back-of-the-envelope calculations, and it looks right that a third of the S&P's gain in earnings has been there.
Well, we also had...
Well, that's not cash. I know, but we had none of that's cash.
I know, but it's been a while since we had a guest on the show a long time ago, and he would keep track of corporate buybacks, and there was one decade period where like 95% of the new money in the market was corporate buying their own stock. I mean, it's something that you can't even think of stuff like this. You would never even dream it would happen, yet it does.
You would think that the immediate reaction to this becoming evident in the market would be that the entire thing would blow up in your face.
But it doesn't, because everybody wants it, and they just keep pouring money in.
Well, right, everybody, but it doesn't. Yeah, but the problem, of course, with it is that this is an exponential chase, because whatever you had last quarter, you have to do better next quarter, or you get hammered.
A serious question I've been waiting for 3 days to ask you.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this thing with the Treasury. Now, I think I know, that if the Fed decides to go out and buy bonds, I know they use the credit, but they basically make up the money and pour it into the system, right? Now, which is accretive, and I haven't seen, they've been doing this for a long time, and the market has revalued, and some assets have revalued, houses surely have. Some stuff's been a little laggard, you know, the gold and silver type of things, but... Now, when the Treasury does this, if they just go out and sell more short-term, use the money to turn around and buy the long-term, there's no incremental money into the system.
That's right.
So it's not the same as if the Fed did it, and yet the reaction in gold and silver and Bitcoin is more. It's more of a reaction. Why is that? Yeah. It should be less, because it should be taking it in on one hand and putting it out on the other.
Chief, you know why?
I think the Fed's helping them.
No, you know full well why. You're not trading this. Well, people like you and I are not trading this.
Yeah, I am. I got a whole bunch of people in gold and silver.
But you're not. You're as a, you know, okay, yeah, I'm trading it too, but... I'm whizzing into a hurricane.
Yeah, and so, yeah.
Okay, you're whizzing into a hurricane. I'm whizzing into a hurricane, even though you're running money for a bunch of people in aggregate a whole hell of a lot more than I am. Fact of the matter is we're both whizzing into a hurricane. The AI computer is the hurricane.
Yep.
Okay, and it's the one placing the bids and offers and executing those trades. Now, that works until it doesn't. When it decides to go the other direction, in which case you're going to be whizzing into the hurricane that's the Cat 5 that's knocking over your house.
Yeah, okay, well, but stop it. Answer, if what they say is true, which, boy, oh boy, I don't want to go down that road and accuse people of lying, because everybody gets mad at me when I do. If what they said is true, the reaction that they're getting from gold and silver in the market, and in the dollar, by the way, should not be what they're getting. Now, if the Fed did it and made up the money and added it to the system...
Well, now that's different.
But I'm saying it's reacting it's the not. Same way, because I'm thinking maybe the Fed's helping him and Warsh just doesn't want to say he is.
Well, guess what? We could always go look at the New York Fed desk and see whether or not there's any basis to that, couldn't we?
We could. That's why do you think I'm asking you?
Well, because that would be...
I have my noodle works a little bit up here, you know, sometimes.
Well, here's... Yeah, except here's the problem with that, Chief. You know, I'm not the only guy out here that can see that.
Right.
So can anybody else, right? Because this is all public, you know. It's like this stuff, you know, the last one of these...
Well, can they bury it in some repo or something where you don't see it for a month?
Well... You'll see it if you look. The problem is which nook and cranny, you know, which rock is it under, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like the same thing with this stuff that you know, Bessent comes out and says he's doing this. He's and the first thing that pops into my head is if that son of a bitch is buying these 20 and 30 year bonds back at par, I'm going to shoot him, because that would be first off, blatantly illegal. Okay. Not that anybody cares about the law anymore.
Oh, no, God, no.
To jail for violating.
No. We don't worry about that.
But it would be blatantly illegal. And secondly, the reason it would be illegal would that it would be about a 30 or 40% literal handout of money from the Treasury to whatever institution held those bonds.
We'd never do something like that, would we?
Well, okay. So in point of fact, the clearing on those transactions is public. It just happens a couple of days after the announcement is made that they're gonna buy them, right? So I went and I dug up a couple of those, and no, he's paying the off the run current market price, that's an absolute push in terms of the amount of money in the system, right? He's not giving anybody a gift to anything. Now, what he is doing is crystallizing those people's losses, which but there are probably people that
he can't buy it from somebody if they don't want to sell it to him.
Well, right, but the point is he's not deliberately overpaying for them, which would be illegal.
The European Union, if they want to go buy back the bonds they offered at negative interest rates, what do you suppose those things are trading at?
Oh, good God. Yeah, I mean...
they got to be 50 cents if there's any time left on them. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, holy crap. Yeah, that would be... But, I mean, the thing is that my first instant impression when I saw this announcement was that he was doing something ridiculously unlawful, and I was going to bust him, and then I was going to have a scoop, right? A big article. And I went and looked, and now that's not what he's doing. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute. This is all psychology. This is just mouthpiece crap. It has zero real impact other than the fact that it's putting more interest rate risk on the Treasury, which is stupid, but it's what he's doing. He's rolling down duration into a generally rising environment. That's not smart. You leave your long-term stuff out there in that environment. All right. But, you know, this is what he's doing. And oh, by the way, it's about as, in terms of size, it's again pissing into a hurricane.
Yeah. I got Fed balance sheet actually going down last week. I've got FINRA margin borrowing down huge last month, which because the market's rallied back a little bit. But seemingly, some of the stuff's kind of going in the right direction here. And yet, gold and silver see a whole different, and Bitcoin see a whole different world. What are they seeing that I'm not seeing?
Well, the Bitcoin thing, there apparently was a tweet on Truth Social, which I'm sure, you know, those people that paid the $100,000 a month got their value in it for the next 6 years right there, that Trump is considering having the federal government take a position in crypto.
Okay.
Well,
I don't, why isn't there as much, I mean, I know the rest of the world doesn't trade like I do, but why isn't there more outrage about somebody selling essentially military secrets to somebody before everybody else gets them?
Well, I don't know about military secrets. I'll just
if you say you're going to bomb somebody and they get it before.
Well, bombing somebody, that would be one of them, right?
Well, I would consider that a military secret if somebody got it before I did.
Well, it seemed to me that, you know, especially if it's the guy that's about to get bombed, right?
I don't understand why, you know, whether or not you like somebody or you don't. I don't see why people bend their morality for other people. You know, stuff like, well, all politicians lie. Well, I don't. I don't think you do. I don't want any politician to lie. I don't care who the hell it is. Plus, you and I know that there's, since we're not 15 anymore, we know that there's a lot of different ways to lie. You know, withholding part of the truth is probably more dangerous than actually telling an untruth in a lot of ways. I mean, the best lie I think I ever heard articulated was it had to be Sammy Sosa. Remember his quote in front of Congress, and they brought him up on the steroids. And the guy was—I mean, he's ripped. He gained so much muscle mass in the last 2 or 3 years. I'm going, oh my God, I don't care how much creatine and how much working out you're doing, that ain't it. And he got in front of Congress and he said, "I have never broken the laws of the United States or the Dominican Republic, and I have never injected myself with steroids." And I'm sitting there, go, okay. I bet that was.
Injected myself, but the doc did.
That's part of it. Or he might not like needles, and he took a lot of pills. And by the way, he took them in Mexico, or he took them on a plane to the United States. He never once said that he didn't take steroids, and yet I'm going to say 90% of the people would say Sammy Sosa says he's never taken steroids. No, he didn't.
Uh-huh. No, he didn't.
No, he. I mean. I think even back in the whistle stop tour, you know, when people, when politicians used to do that, you always had to vary your speech from town to town. Now, you and I wouldn't say that's an outright lie, but it's, I'll use the term, it's bearing false witness a little bit, right? I mean, you're really not going to go up in front of the teachers' union, and if you're going there and say, by the way, the first thing I do when I get in office is to disband the teachers' union, even though that might be absolutely number one on your agenda. I mean, you're going to omit that from the speech to those people, right?
Right.
I mean, and I guess, how do you go, you know, from lie to lie, and how individual people. I mean, you know, by the way, this happened to me. My mother was in the hospital. She's dying. And, I'm trading, and she'd walk in, well, how was your day? If I had a bad day, I'd say it was fine. And, okay, I guess it won't. It's, and I go, ma'am, it's not about me. It's about you. I mean, what am I supposed to do? Tell her that I lost, you know, 10 grand in some stupid trade? I mean, what would that have helped? But it's still a lie. And yet, and then you get to people that will lie for business. Or you'll lie for a company, even though you won't ever lie for yourself. You'll see people that will cheat in business that will never cheat you on a golf course. And then there's people who just, whatever they feel like saying, whatever feels good for them that second, they just say, without any regard whether it's the truth or not. And there's degrees of this. And everybody somewhere is on that spectrum, right? I mean, to a certain extent, I mean, I'll admit, I told my mom I had a okay day when I didn't. But she's, you know, she's 3 days away from croaking. I mean, so, well, I guess it was okay. I still shouldn't have done it, probably, you know. But, I mean, there's degrees along this. And when you start having people, you know, lying for... How many people would lie for their business or give their marketing spiel that would never lie to you on another... I mean, you've known millions of people like that.
Okay, so one of the things that I've pointed out to a couple of people that... I got a couple text messages and phone calls yesterday. Everybody, you know, screaming over the last couple of days about this percent stuff. And I said, look, the reality of the situation is that if you take the Treasury Secretary job, your job is to cheer for the administration and its policies. That's the job.
Unless they leave you on the decoy plane.
Well, then you're still supposed to cheer right up until a missile goes up your butt, right?
Yep.
But, I mean, that's the job. So if you're expecting Bessent to do something other than his job, You're kind of crazy, right? The reality of the budgetary issue and the reality of the squeeze, why rates are going higher, first off, there's a long wave trend change that has occurred. There's not a thing we can do about it. However, the reason these cycles happen, Chief, is human behavior, all right? The reason the cycle turns is because both governments and private business continue to consider a generally declining rate environment as an invitation to do fiscally unsound long-term things, like, for example, taking medical care from 4% of GDP to 20% and letting everybody charge the excess on either their personal or the country's credit card. By the way, you could never do that expansion of 5 times if you didn't do this, because when you got to about the first multiple, nobody would be able to pay and it would stop. But because you have this magical box that you can put things into and the financing cost every time you roll it always goes down, you do it not just in medical, but you do it across the board in every line of business. And eventually, you get to the point where people start to look at that and go, hey, wait a minute, that doesn't make any damn sense. And then the cycle turns and rates go generally higher for 30 to 40 years. Well, guess what? As soon as you detect that that's starting, you'd better cut that crap out.
Well, why did...
And we haven't.
Why, you know, when Larissa was on it, you know, everybody was had a lot of stuff to say, so I tried not to break in. But when I would hope, and I'm sure she does, at some point when she talks to her students and talks about savings and those kinds of things, there's several identities in economics that are just there. I mean, you can't argue with them. And one of them is savings equals investment. All the money, if you go and you make 100 hours a week and you put 20 in the bank or wherever you put it, somebody's an intermediary. Either it's the bank who now takes your 20 bucks, maybe used to have a reserve requirement, but let's not go down that road. And they're going to turn around and lend it to Carl because he's building a building that looks like he's going to make some money on, and he needs the money. So the investment, the 20 bucks now goes to Carl, and he pays interest on it, and the bank pays you interest on it. He pays a little more than you get, which rewards the bank for doing all this work and for the building and for the Little League uniforms. This is not that difficult to understand conceptually. And the same thing has to do with interest rates. And we've gotten so... I have not heard one person in 40 years of watching these idiots, gentlemen, talk about what is involved in a long-term rate.
Yeah.
Is anybody even... I'm sure Larissa does in her class, but if I decide to lend... If I'm a caveman, and I want to lend Carl stones, I've got the stones and he doesn't. He needs them to build something. There's a rate of interest. It's called a time demand for money. You want to use my money, just the same as you want to use my concrete or my... That rate has been around 2.5, 3 to 3.25 for centuries. It's called the real rate of interest. Now, on top of that, you go, now, wait a minute. If I'm lending somebody a dollar, and I know my government is going to make that dollar worth only 90 cents next year, and I'm giving the dollar to Carl for a year to use... Carl's got to give me the real rate of interest, 3%, plus he's got to make up for the 10% that the government's screwing me out of my dollar. So the real rate of interest, I mean, the nominal rate should be 13%. What percentage of the population, how come people talk at these long-term rates, and they have these question marks, why are they here? I can't believe they've been lower. They've been negative for how many years, Carl? And that's just what you're talking about. The real rate of inflation has got to be 4, 4.5, maybe 5. If you put the medical stuff in there, it might be 6 over the last 20 years. Okay, long-term rate should be 6 plus the 3. They should have been 9. And they've been what? Anywhere from 3 to 6 at the most?
That's what
you're talking about. Some people have essentially borrowed at negative interest rates.
Yeah.
Which is the reason why rich people are rich right now and poor people aren't.
Keith, not some people. Everyone who borrowed below the rate of monetary inflation in deficit spending.
Well, the only way a regular person could pull
you
that
didn't,
off.
You didn't. I didn't.
Well, if you could, if I owned a couple of houses, I could have.
If you got one of those.
The only fair interest rate people have gotten in the last. Actually, there's two.
If you look at 3% mortgage.
Okay, but if you advance. Even if it was 5 or 6, you kept pace. Also, I'm going to say, with the amount of money pouring into the market, the margin loans have been a lot less than what the market's gone up.
Well, no. Hold on a minute. Now, were the margin loans under 6 though?
They were 6 or 7, but the market the market's been up 20%.
That doesn't matter. If you are paying less on a margin loan is callable at any time at the discretion of the
But it never is.
Well, but it is callable.
Yeah, right.
Okay, it's callable debt, unlike a mortgage, which is not. All right. But if you have a environment where the deficit is 6% of GDP, which is the world we live in today, all right, then any rate under that, you're being paid to borrow in real terms.
The question, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but the question on the table was, could a regular person have accessed some of this? And I'm saying, you could have
in
a couple of places. You could have in your mortgage, and probably if you didn't be in a couple of bad years, you could have done it on margin loans. Other than that, your credit card's 25. You're not going anywhere with that.
Right. Well, exactly. In the largest case, with very few exceptions, the answer is no. Now, what did we do by forcing that sort of environment across the curve? And then you have people taking out 3% mortgage loans.
You've got amazingly wealthy people.
Well, you have. Well, yeah. What you did was you doubled the price of houses.
Yeah, okay. And you have. Let's put it this way: somebody who worked their whole life, and I'm going to say made 85 grand, and the second wage earner made 50. All right, so you're talking 130, and they bought a house for 100 grand 20 years ago, and now it's worth a mil. They made more on the house than they did earning.
Right. Right.
Of course, it doesn't get you anywhere, because if you sell yours, you got to buy another one for a mil. But it does get you somewhere. If you bought two of them, it got you a lot of places, right?
Right, right. You just have to be very careful with all these people benefit from it. Except what you pointed out that you're seeing from Aud and Larissa. Which is, now you've got all these people that have all this 25% credit card debt, and oh, by the way, they're either taking out HELOCs or refinancing at 6.
Yep.
In order to pay that down. There's a problem with that. It's called, if you refi the house, you reset the amortization schedule,
yep.
Which is way more serious than the interest.
Well, you can always set your amortization schedule. You send them $100 more a month.
And how many people do?
Nobody.
Right. Can you? Yes.
Yes.
Do people do it? No. All right. And resetting that amortization schedule.
I am interrupting. I'm going to say, if you get a 30-year mortgage, I used to be able to do this, pull out my tables. If you just said, okay, your mortgage is $1,200 a month, and if you asked me, what if I sent him 13, I could tell you, okay, your mortgage is now 26 and a half years.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, the rule in general is one extra payment a year, all towards principal, takes a 30-year mortgage and makes it like 18.
Okay.
Okay, so I mean, but you have to actually do it, number one, all right? And the second problem is, yeah, it does, and it changes the schedule. I mean, even throwing another $100 in.
That's what I mean. Even $100 drops it a bit. Well, not if your mortgage is 10 grand.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that people don't do it, and the whole reason that they are doing this in the first place is that they're getting buried by the credit card interest.
Yeah.
So, and if they don't change their behavior at the same time, they're going to run the card up again.
Well, I just got we got a dash here, but kind of a personal note. When I say personal, you and I have been all over this. Discover should have never been allowed to be bought by...
I got the notification that, oh, by the way, you're going to have to go on the Chase app,
No,
Chase
it's not
website.
Chase. It's the other guy. It's the Capital One.
Capital One, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but they just sent me one out. They didn't send the checks, which is weird, because I have an account, a Visa card with U.S. Bank, too, that I very rarely use. But they constantly send me checks.
Oh, they want you to do that.
Oh, yeah. But it's always, no interest for 8 months or something.
Right,
but
right.
Over a year, but then you got to pay up front.
And so, if you don't,
yeah, but I mean, but they want 5% up front. The thing I just got from Discover is only it's less than 5. You got to pay them. So in other words, if I had, 15 grand somewhere else, and I'm gagging on it 22%, I could switch it all over to Discover, pay them 4%, and pay nothing for the rest of the year. I mean, if I I don't have a balance anywhere, but if I did. That's not a bad deal. But they're, of course, making the bet that at the end of the year I'm going to run up even more.
Okay, well, there's two problems with that. Yes, that works, except for one problem, which is that if you don't cover it, a lot of those have a look-back clause in them where the interest is reciprocal back to the start.
I think we got to dash here, but I...
God help it.
Okay,
God
but I think, you know, Nancy talks about this a lot, but you know what that is? I don't think you're going to get a legitimate credit card company to do that. But the people who do it is the people of don't pay on this furniture for a year.
Right, right.
What do they call that credit? They're not credit cards. They're
house credit.
If I miss my first payment to Discover, they're not going to hit me up for the interest for a whole year. It just starts from that. But if I went to some place and bought a living room set for 10 grand and missed the first payment, they're going to want the interest for the whole last year. You're right.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, that's right up your back door.
Oh, God, yeah. Because it's probably 30%.
Yeah.
So you owe him $3,000 for last year. Jesus. Yeah. Anyway, Carl, thank you very much. S&P futures up 36. NASDAQ futures up 200. How far can they push this rally?
Well, I look, when the first crack shows up in all of this data center debt and the fact that it's all being used for surveillance and mass, ultimately, boy, oh boy, if there's another lockdown, you take one step outside your door, the cops are going to be there with handcuffs 10 seconds later. When people get that into
cops,
their head...
Cops, what are they? You don't see any cops around here.
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, you know,
you see ICE people, maybe, but...
The Fauci police. Oh, by the way, if these data center things and these surveillance things are so great, how come we have any illegal aliens in this country?
How come we have people going 150 miles an hour down the expressway?
Well, how about that? How does anybody commit a murder and actually, not get caught within 30 seconds?
Yeah, you would think.
Anyway. Or rape or whatever. Yeah.
Anyway, some of my lawyer guys show me the videos of these things.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary seeing somebody shot in a video. I mean, I never saw that before. And all of a sudden, one guy showed me one where the guy got shot by somebody, and he went down, but he was sort of okay, but he was on the ground. The other guy from a block away takes the guy's gun, shoots. He nails the guy on the ground with a pistol with two bullets and kills him.
Yeah, why am I surprised by that?
That's a hell of a shot.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, S&P futures up 36, NASDAQ futures up 200 on that happy note. Everybody have a good weekend. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.